broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. No doubt starts now. This is the broadcast for January the 20th in the year of our Lord 2020. A lot of 20s going on, ladies and gentlemen. 20 times 20, we hope for peace and pray for peace in Virginia. This is Liberty Roundtable Live, hour one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced that the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration. As you also know, we're live 6 days a week, 2 hours a day on your radio. Saturday's broadcast recap starts now. We talked about the video of Jeffrey Epstein's first attempt for suicide. Well, first off, they say that it was gone. They lost it. Then they said, oh, golly, we found it. Now it's been permanently deleted. They say it's gone for good. Prosecutors blame errors at the Metropolitan Correctional Center for the problem. I don't believe it for 2 seconds, folks. It's a massive cover-up. By the way, Ghislaine Maxwell, that was Jeffrey Epstein's madame, basically the chief female pimp for Jeffrey, if you will. She has powerful contacts that are now protecting her in safe houses around the world, according to Emily Smith and others who are writing about the topic. Wow, we also talked about Evelyn Yang, poor Andrew Yang, running for president's wife, was sexually assaulted by her OGBYN, who is accused of abusing dozens of his patients. She's speaking out now. And I feel bad, don't get me wrong, for Andrew's wife. It's a horrible situation. I wish that on nobody, and it's wrong. And I'm glad for her speaking up, and it's got to stop. There's no doubt about it. But this physician was protected, too. And you know what? I'm glad that she got away from him and never went back to the doctor, as she tells it, and I'm glad she's safe. But there are boys and girls, young men, young women, all around America and around the world that are being abused this very second by Jeffrey Epstein's operation that's allowed to continue. I've asked some solid questions about this. Who is carrying on in Jeffrey Epstein's case? Is it just Ghislaine Maxwell on the run? Is it somebody else stepping in? Who is operating? Who was tied to Jeffrey Epstein? And no one's digging into this thing. But there are Christians that are working on this, trying to get a truth on and a handle on and educate about what's going on in America and around the world. There's a new movie coming out. It's coming to a theater near you this week on the 23rd of January. It's called Blind Eyes Opened. Do you know anything about it? Blind Eyes Opened. All right. It talks about sex trafficking. We know that it exists. That this modern-day slavery is happening all around us, or do we, is the question. Like all evils, it's easier to imagine that it's happening in other places, other countries, and cultures, but the truth is human trafficking and sex trafficking is happening right here in the United States of America. It's in our cities, in our communities, and in our very own neighborhoods. For one day only this week on January 23rd, we will talk about sex trafficking in America. It's coming to a theater near you. 800 theaters. Blind Eyes Opened for one day. Imagine that. All these entertainment, you know, bread and circus entertainment stuff for days and days and days and days. Weekends of box office cat. Hey, a reality check, a documentary on sex trafficking in America on the heels of the Jeffrey Epstein murder, subsequent cover-up, all the connected bigwigs on the run. Underground, hidden, who's carrying on? Nobody knows. Now a documentary comes out on this, and America's got only 800 theaters out of thousands, right? And one day for this thing. Well, I'm grateful that we have something. We talked also about Lexington and Concord Redux in Virginia. Chuck Baldwin, incredible article available at libertyroundtable.com right now. Chuck Baldwin said, quote, I've said it from the pulpit, and I'll say it here. The day that my AR-15 is outlawed, I will be an outlaw. And that sets the stage for what's going on. Donald Trump adding lawyers to his campaign, a bunch of swamp monster insiders. Alan Dershowitz, by the way, that was the attorney for Jeffrey Epstein. Did you know that? Ken Starr and Robert Ray, all part of Donald Trump's impeachment team. He continues to hire insiders at every turn. The Supreme Court will decide whether members of the Electoral College may cast their vote for someone different than the one they pledged to support at the start. So if something changes and you decide to change your vote, they want to make a law against that if you're a member of the Electoral College. What a shame that is. Donald Trump now is shifting his fundraising focus to bundlers. Donald mocked those doing that in the beginning. Now he's doing the very same thing. The Supreme Court is going to decide whether the Trump administration may allow employers to limit women's access to free birth control under the Affordable Care Act. So you think that thing's dead? Not even close. The Supreme Court promises an answer by June. Time will tell. Can employers deny birth control to their employees? Or does government health care supersede employers? Yeah, you got to fund it, but you can't decide what happens in your own arena with your own money. Climate suit on behalf of children got dismissed. That's great news. The judge said, while the young plaintiffs have made a compelling case, that action is needed, wrote Judge Andrew Hurwitz in a 32-page opinion. Climate change is not an issue for the courts. Yeah, that's for sure. Reluctantly, listen, we conclude that such relief is beyond our constitutional power, the judge finishes. Boy, is he right about that. Kathy Bates wraps it all up. In my day, actresses knew why they were going to men's hotel rooms. They just did, she says. Amen to that reality check. And don't get me wrong, I don't support abuse of any kind. But there is joint responsibility people are ignoring in this reality check. All right, that's a recap of Saturday's show, available online at libertyroundtable.com. Spread the word, will you please? Now, on to Virginia before our guest. Urgent need volunteers today, January 20th, to protect patriots at Richmond Gun Rights Valley, or Gun Rights Rally. Mission is to be, listen, mission is to be a calming influence on all sides. Who's writing this? Stuart Rhodes, president of Oath Keepers, who is on the broadcast with us on Thursday. Now, in Virginia this morning, there are two groups of patriots. Those who will shed their weapons and enter the, quote, gun-free zone. They call it a secured area. And those who will remain armed and in the streets. This is serious business, folks. Serious business indeed. Well, little old Liberty Roundtable Live has people on the ground there. I got Stuart Rhodes there. I got my buddy Tim Walters there. I got my buddy Everett Boone there. We've got several people on the ground reporting and going to be checking in for what's going on live. So this will be a unique broadcast because we'll talk about our normal topics, but I'll update you as things go on. So believe it or not, thousands, possibly tens of thousands are coming, they say, about the rally in opposition to the gun rights violations or gun control activism going on in the state of Virginia by the newly elected, overwhelming Democratic body. And normally it's today, the 20th, is a day of citizen lobbying. It's nicknamed Lobby Day. It happens every year. But gun rights activists are now saying this is serious. Okay, they had a prayer, a pledge of allegiance, and they recited the Second Amendment. And there's people rallying in the streets with signs and more. There's thousands of people there. I don't know what's going to happen with this, folks. I pray for peace. But you know what? What do you do when your governor's ready to disarm everybody? For some reason, Donald Trump is silent on this, and I don't understand why. Donald said he was going to get rid of gun-free zones at government schools and in military bases first day. Of course, he never got it done. But now there's a gun-free zone in the capital of Virginia. And some are going in peacefully and disarming and having a rally. Others are saying we will not go into a cage. We are not slaves, and we will not capitulate to his unconstitutional, quote, executive order or mandate. We're not doing it. Sadly, I hate to use this term, but the battle's on. Our prayers are with the patriots. Our prayers are for peace. But we also pray that we can stand for our right to keep and bear arms. Now, is this going to be a civil war? Many say so. I don't think so. I think this is a skirmish, no doubt. I think it's a scary time. because when anybody gets armed and then they push them into the streets, it creates all kinds of danger zones. And I believe there'll be some people arrested, and there'll be a little bit of violence, and there'll be a little bit of spillover, a little bit of confusion. But I believe the government will say, man, we dodged a bullet on this. Thank heavens for Northam. What an incredible guy. Look how he did such a tremendous job keeping the peace. Never mind the fact that it was the Oath Keepers and many other good people that kept the peace. Northam will get all the credit. And then what they'll say is, thank heavens for the FBI and Northam. And by golly, we got to, you know, take away the guns. And what they'll do is have continued skirmishes on this topic all across the country over the next couple of years. And every time they'll tighten the noose of gun control on Americans. I pray this does not happen, but that is my prediction of what I think will go on. All right, without further ado, that's an update on Saturday's broadcast, an update on Virginia. News the networks refuse to use today starts now. Kirk Crosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome, sir. And we also have our buddy Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org with us. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. It's always good to be with you.
What do you think of the update? We got people on the ground galore, man.
Well, I'm glad for the update, Sam. And it makes me sad that Virginia, well, it sounds like, I mean, I haven't studied their law book, but it sounds to me like they don't have the ability to referendum a legislative decision as we do here in the state of Utah. So I think we need to spend a couple minutes on that when we get back from this break, Sam.
And ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Lowell Nelson with us, campaignforliberty.org, reminding us that referendums are one great way to use the checks and balances our founding fathers gave us. You're saying that's been disabled in Virginia, Lowell?
Well, I'm saying I don't know whether Virginia has that capability or not. I know that we do here in Utah, and I'm pretty sure that not all states do, but it is an important escape valve mechanism for the people. You know, if the people want to nullify a legislative act, you know, some bill approved by the legislature, then the people can nullify that act. Just as if the governor had vetoed the bill, the citizens can veto a particular piece of legislation. And I would much rather see Virginia Virginians assembled to do that than assembled to, you know, beat each other up and provide an opportunity for Antifa-type people to come and cause problems. I mean, I imagine that there will be the left will probably see this as a great opportunity to send in, you know, people dressed up like patriots, but really agent provocateurs who just want to sully the name and the reputation of those who hold sacred the value of being able to defend oneself with arms.
So, yeah, you're right about that. And the sad part is the governor, by demanding this, quote, gun-free zone in the Capitol where they're going to be meeting or where the peaceful rally was requested and permit was given and they were going to hold this thing and everything, the governor declared it a gun-free zone. And so a lot of the patriots say we won't go into a gun-free lair. We saw that in Charlottesville, and we're not doing that again. The police literally forced us to have clashes and fights, and it was horribly ran. We're not doing that again. We're going to stand out on the street with our guns. The problem is that makes it 1,000 times more dangerous, because now you have literally tall buildings, narrow streets, people everywhere, no ability to I mean, it's just a disaster. I don't know why the governor would do such a thing.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either, but it's a
well, if you understand the governor's in bed with Antifa, then it makes a lot of sense. The governor wants to create violence and wants to use that as, see, the radicals are crazy with guns and we have to do something. He would love nothing more than that.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I guess the rally's today, so there's not, in fact, it's already in progress probably. So.
Yes, it is. They already had their prayer. They already had their flag. They already recited the Second Amendment. It's well underway already, and it's only going to increase. They say thousands are there. Hundreds have already lined up as early as 4:30 this morning, so it's already well underway.
Yeah. Well, I pray that it will turn out peaceful, Sam. And again, if the citizens had a way to veto a piece of onerous legislation, such as the referendum process that we have here in Utah, then I think it would be a much, much better alternative than simply, pounding on the table and demanding that your legislators not vote for a certain thing. I mean, I don't know. That's pretty dangerous when you don't have that escape.
Yes, it is. So here's the question. They're dividing into two groups right now, Lola Patriots, as far as I can tell. Those who are willing to disarm, go through the, quote, metal detectors and go into the, quote, gun-free zone of Governor Northam. And then there are the patriots who say, I will not go through the gun-free zone. No, thank you. I'll stay armed and stay out here outside and protest. Which group would you be in?
Well, that's a good question, Sam. I'm a big fan of both, but I think that I would probably want to be in the Capitol. I would want to be able to face my representatives in person, and because they know me and I know them, they know what I stand for, and I would much prefer to be on the inside talking with them than being on the outside, looking in.
I understand your point of view, and I'm not here to debate which one's right or wrong. I can see both sides, and from a personal point of view, I'd stay outside because I don't believe in giving away my guns. That just capitulates that if they can disarm this small group for this purpose, then why not more? So that's the problem with that view. Although if I was a reporter, I'd be willing to disarm and go inside and try to do my very best to get the skinny as a news reporter and as a commentary man or whatever you want to say, a newsman, whatever you call me. I don't want to use certain words because then they'll say I'm not licensed or I don't have a permit or I don't know what I am. I'm just Joe Blow breaking it down for you, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. But Kurt, what would you do? Which group would you be in?
That's something I was wondering about. Because I can see the, I guess you could say some benefit to either,
agreed.
Say you go in and you stand up for your rights inside, or you stand out and say, hey, these are our rights here, so.
Now, the Oath Keepers made really a point. Know. They said it would sure be interesting if there were thousands of people outside with guns and the governor's gun-free zone square was flat out empty, not a single foot in there. That would send a clear message, wouldn't it?
Good point. I think so.
And like I say, personally, I'd probably stay outside just by preference, so you know where I stand. I'd be willing to do either as a newsman, Kurt. I think that's kind of important to note as well. So anyway, our prayers are for peace. Well, while that's going on, you hear wars and rumors of wars and civil wars and rumors of civil wars. And wow, it's happening not only internationally, but domestically as we are reporting on the spot. But Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center wrote an incredible column, Defend the Guard. This is kind of a true inside and outside the country, isn't it, Lowell?
It is, Sam. You know, this is basically a 10th Amendment check on unconstitutional war powers. He posted this article just recently, November, I think, this podcast. He did a great podcast in November. We didn't discuss it then. I just missed it for some reason. But in studying, you know, what possibly states can do to curb the encroachment of the general government on the authority of the states, I uncovered it this past week and just studied it. And I do believe we need to discuss it now. I feel pretty strongly about this. In fact, I'm thinking in the long run of introducing a Defend the Guard type bill here in the state of Utah. But we need to get a handle on why this would make any sense at all. I mean, and so that's what Michael Bolden does here in his article, or this podcast he did. He has a podcast called Path to Liberty, and I think he makes some really good points. He starts out with five reasons why a state should check the unconstitutional war power of the general government. Number one is the most obvious reason. You turn to the Constitution and see what it says there. But the power to declare war is vested in Congress alone via the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11, which says Congress shall have power to declare war, grant letters of mark and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. Right? That's right out of the Constitution.
Now, let's be very clear. Not only does the Congress have that express power, but that by nature means the other two branches do not have that power, sir.
Perfect, Sam. Perfect, because that is his second point. Congress has, Congress has the power, but the authority to declare war, state of war, was not given to the executive branch or to the judicial branch. Right, but what's happened really is that basically Congress has given up its authority to the president. They have said in this authority, the AUMF, right, the authority to use military force. That's what and or the War Powers Resolution of 1973. That's what they go to. They say basically we're going to let the president decide. Well, they don't have the authority to let the president decide, Sam. The states did not authorize such a delegation of authority in the Blueprint for Liberty. In other words, the president is not authorized to designate, say, the governor of Virginia as the commander-in-chief of the Army and the Navy. But that's what the Congress did, Sam. That's very analogous to what Congress did. Congress said, okay, we're delegating to the president, the commander-in-chief, the authority to decide whether or not to use violence against another state. That's what the Congress. And they have no authority to do that, just like the president does not have the authority to tell you and me that, okay, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, he is the Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy, right? Isn't that, I mean, that sets it out in black and white. In my
yes,
opinion.
That breakdown is as clear as it gets even for the average farmer, sir, and that was the intent.
Okay, good. And so... Okay, so, and then his third point is exactly what you said, Sam. This War Powers Resolution of 1973 is not a constitutional exercise of power. You know, one of my favorite cartoons, and I used it in 2001, I think, 2003, and I tried to use it as often as I could. One of my favorite cartoons is an image of the Constitution with a stamp on it that says, void where prohibited by law.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen. You've got some of the most hard-hitting talk on your radio. I'm telling you right now, we're breaking down live from Virginia. I've got Patriots' phone numbers on the ground. They're emailing me information right now. Man, I'll tell you about it. My buddy Everett Brune says he's there on the ground, and there's so many people you can't even count them. Thousands are there right now.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
At least two people dead after a Sunday night shooting outside a bar in Kansas City, Missouri. And police say 15 other people were wounded. One of the dead is the suspect. They say it happened in the parking lot of a bar in the southeast part of the city when a suspect just started firing into a crowd that was lined up outside. An armed security guard killed the shooter. One of the people charged with presenting the House impeachment case, warning Republicans in the Senate to be careful about choices they make regarding the trial. Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York.
Any Republican senator who says there should be no witnesses or even that witnesses should be negotiated is part of the cover-up.
He spoke on Face the Nation. Democratic Congressman from Illinois, Bobby Rush, wants a congressional oversight hearing into Major League Baseball cheating scandals. And this is USA Radio News.
130 million Americans made resolutions for 2020, with more than half focused on health. But most resolutions are broken by February. To help you start down the path toward better health outcomes, Ancestry Health is delivering actionable insights for you and your family. Marjan Champagne, Ancestry spokesperson and board-certified and licensed genetic counselor.
Through a supportive, actionable, and affordable experience, Ancestry Health includes access to educational information, genetic counseling resources, printable consumer and physician-ready reports, and a family health history tool so you can take proactive steps with your healthcare provider to address potential health risks identified in your genes and family health history.
Why is the time right for Ancestry Health?
Your genes don't need to be your destiny. Understanding your familial and inherited health risks can help you take action to improve your chances of better health now and in the future.
Start down the path toward better health with Ancestry.com/health.
President Trump speaking at the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual convention in Texas yesterday, celebrating recent trade deals as wins for America's farmers, and he also celebrated those farmers themselves.
You feed our people, you fuel our nation, you sustain our land, you uphold our values, and you preserve our cherished American way of life. We want our products made, grown, and raised right here in the USA.
2020 census will officially begin tomorrow. The first census questionnaire will be ceremoniously delivered in the small community of Tuxuk Bay, Alaska. A statement from the U.S. Census Bureau says Alaska's vast, sparsely settled areas are traditionally the first to be counted. The rest of Alaska, including Anchorage, will be counted with the rest of the country beginning in mid-March. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Inside legislative offices, lobbying efforts begin. Yeah, outside, ladies and gentlemen, people are standing up. In fact, our buddy Everett Boone from the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. He's on the ground there, and he says, man, I'm telling you right now, there's so many people, I can't count them all. They're in the streets. They're armed. They're, as far as the eye can see, he's guessing 50,000 people. I don't know if it's really that many or if that's a fair or realistic guess or not, but I know there's flat out thousands. So far, it's peaceful. Now, believe it or not, thousands of gun rights supporters from Virginia and across the country are coming to Richmond today for a rally in opposition of gun control laws being advanced by the General Assembly's new Democratic, quote, majority. And so it's a problem here. Now, there's a guy there. Let's see, what's his name? Chris? Chris Anders is his name. He can pinpoint exactly what inspired him to protest. He says, it's Radical Ralph, that's the problem. You know, you used to have Wreck-It Ralph, now you got Radical Ralph, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, Anders is gathering signatures today at the Capitol demanding on a petition for the recall of the governor over this. He says he and like-minded friends are realizing they got to take action this year. Northam's going to limit handgun purchases and everything else. And his promises carry significant weight after Democrats won majorities in both houses just recently. Believe it or not, in response, more than 110 towns, cities, and counties across Virginia have passed some type of resolution in defense of gun rights. The rally in Richmond today has become a, quote, key high-profile opportunity. We'll keep an eye on the ball for you, though. I got a lot of people on the ground ready to report at a moment's notice. They're emailing me updates on what's going on as we speak. So little old Liberty Roundtable, tiny talk show. Some might call it the mouse that roared. Anyway, we got more detail and more people on the ground. Stuart Rhodes says urgent need volunteers to keep the peace and protect patriots at gun rights rally in Virginia. He says his mission, that's the oathkeepers.org mission, is to be a calming influence on all sides, oathkeepers.org. So we're doing a phenomenal job breaking this down just for you. While that's happening, though, we're talking about Defend the Guard, Michael Bolden, 10th Amendment Center, and how critical it is to stand up peacefully. And so you got kind of three groups of people. You got the people outside with guns, you got the people inside having a peaceful rally, and then you got the other group going to the legislative offices today in Virginia. This is exactly as our founding fathers intended, isn't it, Lowell?
It sure is, Sam. It sure is. And they were very specific about this. James Madison discussed the power of war a lot. He is known as the father of our Constitution, our blueprint for liberty. He said this, quote, "The executive has no right in any case to decide the question whether there is or is not cause for declaring war," end of quote. Now, let me read that again. "The executive has no right in any case to decide the question whether there is or is not cause for declaring war." In other words, that authority was placed squarely on the shoulders of Congress and no one else. And so, obviously, if we're attacked, the president can mobilize troops to defend the state, but in that case, someone else has changed the state of affairs from peace to war, not the president. But, you know, you look at all these other cases in which we're involved since World War II, which is the very last time Congress has declared a state of war with other countries. You look at Korea and Vietnam and so many, many other conflicts. Not a single one has been prefaced with a declaration of war by Congress. And that's what we're trying to kick back against here in our discussion today. Now, the fifth point that Michael Bolden makes here, Michael Bolden of the 10thAmendmentCenter.com, he says that a lot of people believe, well, the president can use violence because coercive force, because that's not war. But, you know, founding-era dictionaries and other sources, both legal and lay sources, tell us that when the Constitution was approved, war consisted of any hostilities initiated by a sovereign over opposition. A very typical dictionary definition, for example, was, quote, "the exercise of violence under sovereign command against such as opposed," end of quote. Right? So the neocons will claim it's not war. They'll do this till the cows come home. They'll say, it's not war. We're not involved in war. You know, this killing of people. It's not war. That's what they'll say. But I'm here to tell you that war is war no matter what you call it, right? You can call a pig, you can call this pig a duck all you want, but that doesn't make the pig a duck. It's still a pig. And so basically Congress is the one with responsibility to declare war, not the executive. They have no authority to relegate or to delegate that authority to declare war to anybody else, not the Supreme Court, not the President of the United States. They do not have that authority. Now, here comes the question. What should be done about it when the chief executive decides upon war, which he is not authorized to do? And when the Congress refuses to remove the president for waging a war without a congressional declaration of war? That's really, I mean, if you want an impeachable offense, that's much, much more serious.
And Chuck Baldwin wrote an article talking about how he believes that President Trump should be impeached. And he points out a bunch of reasons why. Some of them I agree with, some of them I do not agree with. And I do agree that many of them the president should be impeached over. However, I made the, in my opinion, important point that, hey, the second a president today takes his oath of office, he is impeachable. Why? Because we're violating way too many of the constitutional principles, the rule of law principles. And so even though Donald is violating a lot of those things, and even though I do believe them to be impeachable offenses, if I were to vote to impeach the president or not, I would choose not. And the reason I would choose not is, like I said, we've moved the presidency so far from what it ought to be that anybody you elect, even if you guys elected me or you, we would be impeachable the second we take the oath of office. We'd be spending illegal money. We would be in all 130-plus nations militarily, engaging in war everywhere. Okay, we wouldn't be able to help it. And so I don't believe that you can hand the ignoring of the Constitution for the last 50, 60, 100 years and how far afield we, the people, and our legislative representatives have let things go. I don't believe you can all of a sudden just dump that on one president's head, the Donald, and say, hey, you got to be in complete compliance right now. I don't think it's reasonable. However, I do believe that he needs to be moving the needle towards liberty. And if he is, I'll support him. And if he's not, then we need to work on that issue. I believe that's really the critical discussion point, Lowell.
Right. Totally agree with you, Sam. In fact, that's why I included the Congress in my statement here, that the Congress is to blame. Of Congress that passed the AUMF, you know, this authorization to use military force.
Yes, Congress is to blame, but the people right are to here. Blame too, though, because if Congress doesn't hold the president, then we need to get somebody who will. And that's our responsibility, and we have shirked that duty just as much as congressional servants have shirked their duty, sir.
Exactly right. And states have shirked their duty. They have shrunk from doing what they were supposed to do.
Yes, in all fairness, though, we've stolen their representation, though, by the 17th Amendment. So they've shirked their duty, no doubt, but we've also dismantled them by violating the checks and balances. That's something they didn't have control over, but they lost a lot of ability at that point as well. So no doubt there's plenty of blame to go around, sir.
I'll say there is, Sam. We have to start somewhere to change the balance of power.
And that's exactly why I want to double down and explain that they're impeachable offenses, because I don't want to dismiss that. Just because other presidents have done it, that doesn't make it any less impeachable. But I also don't want to be the guy to throw Donald under the bus and act like we can just act like, oh, man, one man, it should end and stop with him. Look, he inherited an impeachable situation by our lack of checks and balances being insisted upon. So I would not, I'm going to say it again, I would vote to not impeach the president. All right. So if the citizens of the several states truly want freedom, peace, and prosperity, there's a way to get it done. And Jacob Hornberger talks about it in detail. He wrote an article called A Limited Government versus a National Security State. I mean, this is almost the very battle in Virginia taken to the nation discussion, isn't it?
It sure is, Sam. And I want to get to this Hornberger article right after talking about what the states can do and are doing right now to put a damper on this power of the general government to go to war, right? And so there's a piece of legislation called Defend the Guard Act, and I wasn't aware of this, but there are 22 states, Sam, wherein this legislation is being introduced. Has been introduced in one state, I think, back east somewhere, for the last 4 years. And basically it says, if Congress doesn't make a declaration of war, then the National Guard in our state are prohibited from going into battle.
Well, hey, we hear that some were calling for the National Guard to take away the guns. It wasn't Northam. But even that very discussion is happening in Virginia right now. Sadly, the president of the United States is silent. He's not even talking about it. The guy doesn't even have his head in the game.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, 4 grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved 4 checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999, text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com, defendapatriot.com.
Mom, you don't know anything about me anymore. Tommy, I know you're good at math. You don't like English. I know Ryan smiled at you yesterday at school. I know your favorite color is purple. And I know you don't like mushrooms. And who can blame you? I mean, mushrooms are a fungus, and people generally try to avoid funguses. Or is it fungi? I'm never quite sure. But, you know, either way, I mean, penicillin is good.
Penicillin is a mold.
Huh. Well, I guess you're right. So you like penicillin, but not mushrooms.
No matter what you talk about, love is what they'll hear.
Mom, if we talk, will you be quiet?
Love to.
A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at mormon.org.
All right, so it's critical the states get involved, ladies and gentlemen, and it's critical that we understand the checks and balances. That's really the point of the 10th Amendment Center and Michael Bolton's incredible column on that issue. Jacob Hornberger follows up. We'll get to that in a second. But, hey, we got to understand who's who. We got to use the supreme law and the checks and balances put in place. It's that simple. For starters, Lowell, if we don't do that, really, we're nowhere.
You're right, Sam. In fact, I have to quote Daniel Webster in 1814 in a speech in Congress. Now, a lot of people, we applaud Noah Webster, but everybody has Daniel Webster on their blacklist, right? I mean, Daniel Webster was not the greatest member of Congress, but he did a great speech in Congress, and he said this, and then we'll move on to this other article, but he said, "It is the solemn duty of the state government to protect their own authority over their own militia and to interpose between their citizens and arbitrary power," right? And so he said, "These are among the objects for which the state governments exist, and their highest obligations bind them to the preservation of their own rights and the liberties of their people." I mean, basically, it's, you know, the general government is stealing power, encroaching on the authority of the state when they send National Guard troops into combat zones without a congressional declaration of war. And so the Defend the Guard Act is basically a state government standing up and saying, we are not going to allow our troops to go into battle zones if Congress does not declare a state of war, you know, as they're supposed to do, you know, in the Constitution. So anyway, I think this is something that Utah ought to consider in the upcoming legislative session. We're going to be speaking to some reps about it, and I don't know. It seems to me like a very good, like, shot across the bow of the general government for the state government to stand up and say, look, it's not right. It's not constitutional. We did not give you, federal government, the authority to do what you're doing, and so our National Guard, they're not going. When you call, they are not going. So,
amen to that. And that's certainly something we need to put in place because, again, the checks and balances are being violated at every turn. Richard Mack emails in, by the way, and he said, hey, Sam, Richard, Donald Trump did make a comment about the ad or what's going on in Virginia. He said, Democrats want to take your guns. That's why you should vote Republican in the 2020 elections. Yeah, you're right, Sheriff, and I said Donald Trump's not even talking about it because a flippant comment like that is all he really made. What Donald should be doing as commander-in-chief of the greatest country in the world, he should be saying, Governor, stand down, my friend. And President Trump should be signing the petition to remove the governor, to recall the governor for his belligerence. He has no authority to use a, quote, executive order or a decree to demand a gun-free zone. Now you can say, well, wait a minute, Sam. Can't the governor do that if he has credible threats? What do you say, Lowell, constitutionally?
You have to go to the Constitution of the state of Virginia, Sam. I don't think the general government has authority in this matter. They might, in other words, I think Donald can sign on as an interested party, as an interested citizen, but not as a commander-in-chief. I don't believe it's like a general, it's like President George Washington going into Pennsylvania to put down the Whiskey Rebellion, right? He had no authority to do that. And so I don't think President Trump has any authority of the general government to go tell the governor of the state of Virginia to do anything, right? And unless he's invited into a state.
What if the governor's violating the national guideline that says you will not infringe on people's rights to keep and bear arms, Governor?
Well,
and he does.
State of Virginia. If the state of Virginia has that clause, if they have a Second Amendment-like clause in their state constitution, then you're right. Then the governor has no authority to do what he did.
And if he does, then what happens?
That's a good question, Sam. I don't have a good answer for that. But that's when the citizens of the state of Virginia need to take action and nullify that law.
Like fill the streets with gun owners armed to the teeth, that kind of stuff? All right, just saying.
Maybe just that thing, yep.
Anyway, I bring this up because what we're talking about philosophically with these incredible articles by 10th Amendment Center is really what's going on in the ground, or on the ground right now in Virginia, and I hope that I'm highlighting both in a way that's meaningful to say, look, this is philosophical in terms of an understanding of the sacred cause of liberty and the checks and balances. But this is also real in the sense that, hey, we can apply it in our day right now. These articles weren't written by Michael Bolden and these guys, Jacob Hornberger, to just be philosophical in nature. They were to help us understand and navigate the complicated waters to which we find ourselves in right this very second, Lowell.
Yeah, absolutely right, Sam. And one of the hallmarks of our U.S. administration today is that it is a national security state. It wasn't always that way because we were formed as a limited government republic of republics. Every republic, every state in the Union was a republic, and the combination or the confederation of all those states was what we call, what the founders, the framers called a republic of republics. That was our foundation. And now we've turned into a military, a military security state, right? I mean, that's what we are today, and that's what Hornberger is talking about in his article, founded on limited government republic. But what do we got today, right? If you look at, we didn't have a Pentagon back then, no CIA, no NSA. There was an army, but it was relatively small.
And constitutionally, it wasn't supposed to be standing either.
No standing armies. And that's how the framers wanted it. They did not want a general government with a military-industrial establishment. They believed, Sam, that the greatest threat to the freedom and well-being of the citizenry lay not with some foreign regime, in other words, some outside power, but rather with its own government, our own government. The framers also understood that the way governments throughout history had destroyed the freedom of their citizens was, in large part, through the power of their military forces.
Wow, and you see this very thing, reality on the ground with Governor Northam, huh?
Yeah, exactly. The Virginia governor right now is using military force, basically, and it's going to result in the usurpation of the freedom of the citizens of the state of Virginia, right?
So you got a headline from Jacob Hornberger that says a limited government, a republic, versus a national security state. That's the real battle in Virginia right now. Who's got what authority where? Will the real authority people please stand up, right?
Yeah. And it's sad that states are going along with this this notion. It's really sad. It was not that way in the beginning. You know, in fact, if you were to, if the framers were to see what was going on today, they would be appalled. I mean, basically, you know, it's like suppose the framers of the Constitution had said to people, this Constitution, say you're in 1788, right, before the Constitution has been ratified. Had they said that the Constitution will bring into existence a federal government that will include a vast, permanent, and ever-growing military and intelligence establishment with military and intelligence bases all over the United States and the world, and together with the president, the military will have the power to control the nation in war, embroil the nation in war, excuse me, anywhere in the world without congressional consent. It will possess the power to spy on and keep files on the American people. in order to keep them safe. It will have the power to take
it. And it will do so via its governors, so you can't say nobody can stop it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And take Americans into custody, place them in military dungeons or secret intelligence prisons, camps, where they can be tortured. It will also have the power to assassinate Americans, right? And had they been told that, there is no way in the world they would have ratified the Constitution. The fact that they ratified the Constitution in 1788 is evidence that the Constitution was not designed to bring us to a national military state, a national security state, right? I mean, that's the bottom line here. And so, I mean, the citizens of the day, they would have died laughing, and then they would have continued to operate under their Articles of Confederation. They would not have ratified the Constitution.
Hey, Lowell, do you believe the states have authority to violate the Bill of Rights?
Yes. The Bill of Rights, ratified in by 1791, were not a limitation on the states. They were good ideas, yes. In fact, most of the states had those very same prohibitions in their own state constitutions.
Yes, I believe, though, that they are prohibited by the states. I'm different from most constitutionalists in that. A lot of people believe that the state, for example, could violate your First and Second Amendments, and I don't believe that. I think that's against the intent of the founders. Now, they didn't put a rule that said that it applies to the states because they didn't want the federal government controlling the states. But if you accept that this Bill of Rights is a God-given, unalienable right of me, brought to the table before governments existed, that's why governments can't touch them, then you acknowledge that before God, a state can't violate that right either, or it's rogue government.
Oh, totally agree, yeah, because these rights came from God, not from government.
So if they did, then a state can't violate them either. Now, the federal government can't tell the state not to violate them, which is your point, but the fact to say that they don't apply to the states is irrelevant. It's not true. It does apply, or they're not inalienable, given to me by God, see?
Right.
Who's in charge here? The state? No. God. And the state must be subservient to God, just like the feds. The point that you're making is the federal government didn't prohibit the states because it has no authority to do so. That point's valid. But it doesn't change the fact that those rights, the states are rogue if they violate those rights, those God-given rights, as well as the federal government.
Yeah, and my point also is that the states were far more jealous of their rights. In other words, they valued the rights of their citizens far more than the general government did. It was unthinkable back in those days, in the days of the framing of the Constitution, it was unthinkable for states to,
In other words, the states would never violate this, and therefore the founders didn't even focus on it enough because it was an understood given.
Exactly. Yep.
Now, that's in my mind where we need to educate, though, and that's why I say the states don't have any authority to violate these God-given inalienable rights either. Let's be very clear. Just because the federal government can't prohibit them, that doesn't change the fact that God gave me the rights, not government. Therefore, government cannot violate them. All right, let's end with Jacob Hornberger's, in my opinion, important line. It starts out and says, if the citizens of the several states truly want freedom, peace, and prosperity. Go ahead, Lowell.
Then the restoration of a limited government republic and a non-interventionist foreign policy being a part of that restoration, then we must toss onto the trash heap of history the national security state one brick at a time. We must dismantle the Pentagon, the military-industrial complex, the CIA, and the NSA. Sam?
I don't know what to say except for where do I sign, sir?
Yeah, but it's going to take a lot of effort over a long period of time to do this, Sam. It's not going to happen overnight.
And it's going to take educated patriots to get this done, and that's where Liberty Roundtable Live hopefully plays a small but critical part in the restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Lowell Nelson, Godspeed, sir. We're always out of time. Never enough time for your timely topics. Thank you, sir, and Godspeed.
Thank you, Sam. You're welcome.
All right, there he goes, doing a phenomenal job as always. For Sam and Kurt, we declare this nation shall endure. Hour one in the can, hour two coming up. The doctor, Scott Bradley, will be in the house, plus some updates from Virginia. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic.